Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome to the show. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, way up here, the top of Burnaby Mountain. I'm Jesse. And before we get going on the show, I want to acknowledge that this program and all of CJSF's programs are produced and broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here living and gathering to share stories and music and culture and information since time immemorial. And I am very grateful to be in this space doing the work that I do on these lands that were never formally given up or ceded or conquered. Once again, I am Jesse. This is Speak Up. This will be my last live show of the year as I'm about to head out of town on holiday vacation. Today on the show, two main pieces. I will be speaking with Sena Isaac about her new paper published in Embark's Climate Justice Journal. We'll give a quick hello.
Hello, Jesse. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, very happy to have you in studio. We'll be talking about your paper and the journal and some other related things coming up real quick here. And in the second half of the show, we will have an interview by CJSF volunteer Florentina, who spoke with Movement YVR about the transit advocacy that group is doing. But we are going to start, as we always do, with a little bit of local music. So we're going to go back to one of my favorites from this year that I have played over and over again and will continue to do so. It's Yawn from the record Wish I Could Have. This is called World Is Burning.
Waiting, anticipating, all the precious building. Kind of got the feeling like I've got a new lease on the life I'm leading. Where I just abandon everything I'm feeling, and as it gets darker, I don't have to see it. I can close the curtains, choose not to believe it. Everybody's laughing, we're having such a good time. Everybody's dancing, we don't read the headlines. 'Cause the world is slowly burning. I can't help this earthly yearning.
So
nothing good coming.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was World is Burning by Jan. I'm Jesse, and I'm joined in studio by Senna. Hello again.
Hello, Jesse.
How are you doing today?
I am so good. Thank you so much once again having me on your radio show. This is a first. Little nervous because I've never done this before. I've never been live. I've never even been at the studio before. So this is a first. But honestly, I would say I'm more tired than nervous at this point because I've just got done with finals and I'm still recovering from that.
Yeah, tis the season.
Yes, right? Exactly.
I think finals or not, everyone's a little sort of a little frayed at this point, and just at the point where we all need a little bit of a break.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Especially professors have to mark everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they got to work sometimes, I guess.
True.
Right? You're here today to talk about a paper that you had published called Restoring Mangroves in China, A Dual Approach to Climate Mitigation and Community Empowerment. Before we jump into that, can you just give us like a light self-introduction, who you are, how you got to the point where you're writing papers about mangrove restoration in China?
For sure. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Senna. I'm a fourth-year environmental science student here at SFU Burnaby campus. I wrote this paper exactly 2 years ago, so it's been a while. It was for this Ecology for Geographers course. The professor said to write a paper on good environmental news to challenge us, because I'm sure a lot of you always hear the constant bad news about the environment, like the rise in sea level or the increase in greenhouse gases. So I thought, okay, this is a challenge. What can I research about finding this positive news story? So I was mainly interested in greenhouse gas emissions because we are way above the safe level of CO2 gas emissions in the atmosphere. Right now, I think we're at 427.4 parts per million. And the safe reference level is 350 parts per million. So we're way above this threshold, right? So I thought, okay, let me research what countries are doing to decrease this amount of CO2 from the atmosphere. And I chose China because they're one of the top greenhouse gas emitters, along with USA, of course, Canada because of the oil gas industry in Alberta, and of course, Saudi Arabia. So I researched into China, like what they're doing to decrease the CO2 levels. And they were focusing on mangrove restoration. And this is so impactful because we can just simply plant a lot of these mangroves, right, to sort of sequester the carbon from the atmosphere to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. So I was like really passionate about this because this is a nature-based solution. So rather than incorporating technology, I suppose, just plant more trees.
It does seem, simple in a way, and also very common sense that, you know, a solution to climate change, to increased carbon output, is to plant more trees.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Just as a real baseline for our listeners, what is a mangrove?
Yeah, that's a great question. Even my friend was like, what the heck's a mangrove? Basically, it's just like a tree or a shrub that grows in salty water. So you can't really find them in Canada because the climate here is too cold. So they're mainly found in coastal regions like Malaysia. Indonesia has the most mangroves population globally. And of course, the coastal regions in China, which I focused on.
Right. People might also know like Florida has mangroves, right? As sort of maybe the closest, although I don't know how that geography works across the Pacific versus across all North America. What makes mangroves particularly effective in carbon sequestration?
So mangroves can sequester a ton of carbon. I believe globally, like 12 billion metric tons, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And they're able to sort of capture this carbon in their leaves, in their roots, in their soil, and like underground, like beneath the water. So in their roots, as I mentioned. So not only that, they have additional benefits such as protecting the coastline as a natural barrier because, of course, in these coastlines, you're going to have frequent storms, right? So by planting these mangroves, not only they sequester a ton of carbon, they also act as a natural barrier to protect the coastlines because in China, the largest mangrove reserve is home to like 2.4 million people.
Wow.
So just by planting all these mangroves, they're able to protect this coastal region, right? And they're also home to a ton of fish, shrimp. So all these benefits, that's why I focus on mangroves specifically.
Right. It's interesting because, like you're saying, in addition to it being kind of a common sense solution to just to replant, it also has all these other additional hidden, maybe not hidden, but mm-hmm. additional benefits beyond just the planting and carbon
yeah,
sequestration.
Yeah, right. It's like a whole chain of benefits mm-hmm. to the environment.
One of the things that you mentioned in the paper, and I know, as you mentioned, it's been 2 years yeah. since you wrote it, but that one of the sort of challenges or things that was being done well in some places but not others was this idea of community engagement in decision making and climate justice. Can you talk about how those played into your paper with about mangrove restoration?
Yeah, so initially when I wrote the paper, it was more science-y based rather than like this climate justice. So when I submitted this paper, the former director of development, Jamie, shout out to her. She liked my paper, but she suggested that I should focus on this community component of like, okay, who are the ones that are actually being impacted in this coastal region, which is the natives, of course, who pretty much live there since forever. They're the ones who are affected by mangrove deforestation because, as I mentioned, you're able to find shrimp, fish in these sort of tidal pools along the mangroves. So this is called like sustainable aquaculture. When it's high tide, all these fish and shrimp come. And when it's low tide, they are sort of sustained within the sediments between these mangroves. So the fish just come to them and it's just a natural, sustainable thing they do. So if you keep cutting down these trees, well, how are we supposed to get the fish, right? So by including them in like policy making or these governmental approaches, we're able to hear their voice and their views on, okay, how can we sort of conserve these mangroves, right? How can, since they're the ones that have been impacted, it would make more sense to include them in the decision-making process, right?
Right. It seems like it also maybe gives, you know, if you're motivated to implement and discover these solutions or approaches to mitigating climate change, if you're looking to build support for those, if you can engage with community, you'll find a lot more reasons to support a given thing, or you'll find out that, you know, maybe your approach needs some changes or needs some tweaks in order to properly serve the people who live there.
Yeah, exactly. Even here in Canada, like, we need more Indigenous speaking people to represent these environmental causes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned the process of engaging with Embark, with Jamie, about the paper. What was the process of having your paper selected and published in the journal?
So this was like a new thing they made, I think, last spring when I was a food justice facilitator. They told us that we're able to submit our paper so they can publish it. And I thought, oh, this is so cool. Why not? Initially, I was going to submit it to the Student Learning Commons Center, but that was during finals season, so I didn't prioritize it. I was, of course, focused on my finals, so I didn't really have time to edit it. But then there's this new opportunity from Embark Sustainability. Did I shout out them? Shout out to them again. So I thought, okay, why not just publish it, see if I win? And I did. I was one of the four that won this competition, so to speak. And I never thought I would actually have a paper published, which is really cool once again. So Jamie thought to focus on this just climate justice component, which I've had, which is really smart, of course. So yeah, I just submitted it, and then she sort of revised it for me. I also revised it, submitted it once again. And yeah, recently it's published on the Embark website.
And what does it mean to you to have a paper published?
Oh, it's honestly, like I said, I've never thought I would actually have a paper published on the internet. It means a lot to me. Embark provided me so many cool opportunities. I'm also like a Welcome Day Hive leader, so I always tell my new students, get involved with Embark. They have so many cool things regarding the environment, climate justice, food justice. So it means a lot. It also means that students from different backgrounds are able to read my paper and learn from it. So Flo, where you're going to have her later on, she is the one that reached out to me via Instagram saying, you should get on the radio and talk about it. And she liked my paper. Like, okay, you actually read my paper. Cool. So here we are. But yeah, it's a really nice experience.
Yeah, it's not super common to have other students in general, but particularly other students from outside your program or whatever, read your work.
Yeah.
Right? And so yeah, it's a cool, I imagine it's a cool experience to have that happen and have people reach out and be like, hey, I read your paper.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coming back to the paper itself, was there anything that really surprised you or stood out to you about the research or about what you wrote about?
Great question. What stood out? I guess that nature-based solutions is the way, right? Like I said, just plant a lot of trees. They naturally sequester tons of carbon. It's like a natural mechanism they do, right? It definitely aids in mitigating climate change effects. And it's just outstanding how plants are so important. My professor, the one I wrote the paper in for her class, she would go on and on about how plants are important. If we want to colonize Mars, if it'll ever happen, we need plants because it's at the bottom of our food pyramid, right? It supports us all. So yeah, just knowing that plants are so important and underrated in our environment, it's just nature-based solutions the way, for sure.
You mentioned at the beginning that the professor that asked you to write this paper was looking for you to focus on sort of good news or, you know, positive solutions as opposed to the ever-present doom and gloom that surrounds climate change discourse. Do you think that this work or that course changed your perspective or made it easier for you to look for positive solutions and stories?
Honestly, yes. Because a lot of my friends in the environmental program, they say, this is one depressing measure, honestly, because it's all constant negative news, which is, I mean, it's facts, right? But of course, there are good positive news out there. It may be hard to find because, you know, negative news is more attractive to the person, right? But there are positive news out there. It was a little hard to find at first, not gonna lie. But honestly, I'm hopeful. A lot of students are very bright. They have their own cool projects they're working on, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. And have you received beyond, it's obviously nice to have the article published and to have people reach out. Have you received any other feedback about about the article itself?
I had another friend, and she also asked, what the heck's a mangrove? Not an environment student, but yeah, she really liked it. My other friend who volunteers for SFU PERG really liked it as well. I'm like, oh, people are actually reading this? Okay, so cool. But yeah, it was really nice.
Great. And what's next for you?
What's next for me? This question. Well, next semester, it should be my last. I literally just need one more course to graduate, which is the capstone course, the big one. Yeah, I'll graduate. And after that, I'm going to take a good break because I've been studying forever. I'll probably go overseas, like Mediterranean Sea. I love the food. I'm from the Mediterranean Sea. I'm Turkish. So hopefully visit Italy, preferably Sicily, because we have a lot of cultural similarities. And then after that, find a damn job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big one.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, is there anything else you think people should know about the paper, about yourself?
Well, I want to encourage other students to submit their paper to Embark. I believe they'll have another submission going on probably sometime next year. So definitely check out Embark Sustainability. Publish your papers, because why not share what you've worked on, right? Rather than submitting it just for a class, submit it to Embark. It'll showcase what you've learned, what you've worked on, and so other students can read it, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of students probably don't even think of that as a possibility,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Good to hear that. You can find the Embark Climate Justice Journal by searching Embark Climate Justice Journal. It's also on the SFU library website and linked from the Embark website as well. And yeah, you can check out Senna's paper, Restoring Mangroves in China, A Dual Approach to Climate Mitigation and Community Empowerment, along with the rest of the first ever issue volume of the Embark Climate Justice Journal.
That's right.
And Senna, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for having me.
Of course. You've picked a song to play yourself out. Tell us about this one.
Okay, this song is Dua Lipa and Sean Paul, No Lie.
Great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Play. Feel your eyes, they all over me. Don't be shy, take control of me. Get the vibe, it's gonna be lit tonight.
Baby girl, you give me 10 ton of fatness. Give me some of that. Thinks with the badness, look how she at. Shape like a dead pattern, not just that. It's a good piece of mental sand that they cap. Hot piece of game, I'm in love how you chat. Watching every step of the paper, the way you got. Staying in my brain, memory not detached. Mainly my aim is to give it this love, if not dig the way you move. Let me acknowledge the way you do. Then I would not lie, baby, you be me a black addict. It's how hypnotic the way you move. That's why I wanted to get to you. And I would not lie, to baby, you move so hypnotic.
No lie,
girl, you never mean
to. Feel your eyes, they all over me. Don't be shy, take control of me. Get the vibe, it's gonna be lit tonight.
Girl, you never mean. Own it and let me own it, my girl. Give you all the style that I have mastered. I see what may be good, that's my word. Give it the good loving that is preferred. You deserve it, so don't be scared. Is it not the way you move? Let me acknowledge the way you do. Then I would not lie, baby.
Control of me, get the vibe, it's gonna be lit tonight. No lie, hypnotized, pulling
body, let me see you just do it, get 100%. Move that body, let me see you just do it, girl, go and represent. Shake that body, let me see you just do it to the fullest extent.
Bird note. Though most birds that enliven beaches in summer have gone south, tiny sandpipers called sanderlings are easy to find on winter shores. They're intensely busy birds, persistently following the smallest waves as they lap in and out. High tide pushes burrowing invertebrates closer to the surface of the sand. As the waves retreat, the top layer of sand swirls loosely. Sanderlings rush in to probe the sand with their small but tough beaks, then flee as the next wave breaks. The diversity of sanderlings' diet is impressive. Various small crustaceans, especially mole crabs, isopods, and amphipods, are important elements. A sanderling's probing also yields miniature clams and bristly, segmented polychaete worms. In spring on Delaware Bay, horseshoe crab eggs are a vital food. And a sanderling's dining options don't end there. They chase invertebrates through shallow pools and pluck flying insects out of the air. In a pinch, they can turn to plants, buds, seeds, and algae. But they're best known for that elegant dance at the edge of the waves. Watch for them performing along most of the U.S. coast, from city shorelines to barrier islands. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is dedicated to Deb Rivel for her many years of board service and generous support of Bird Note.
One, two, three, two.
Born in a barn to a teenage mom 4 years before his birth. With X-ray vision and super speed and a brain the size of Earth.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started, so I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Yeah, come volunteer with us. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station way up here at SFU, where we are volunteer run. So if you want to get on air, we'll train you. You don't need any experience. You just need the will to do it. If you want to help out behind the scenes, same thing. Come on up, pop by the station in the basement of the Student Union building. I guess it's the ground level. Part of it's like a garden suite, you know, where half of it's underground, but there's still windows to the outside. Anyway, can't miss us. Room 1420. We're the one with little speakers blasting out the radio. And a whole bunch of records that you can see from outside. Pop by the station, or as that PSA, public service announcement, for those of you unfamiliar with the arcane terminology of the radio station, as that public service announcement said, just give a message, give a shout out to our volunteer coordinator, Jeremy, at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. That's the number 4, vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. As I said, this is Speak Up. I'm Jesse. Thanks again to Senna for joining me for the first half of the program to talk about her paper, Restoring Mangroves in China, A Dual Approach to Climate Mitigation and Community Empowerment, one of the articles published as part of the inaugural volume of the Embark Climate Justice Journal. You can check out that the whole thing at on journals.lib.sfu.ca. It's journals.lib.sfu.ca, and then scroll down to Embark Climate Justice Journal, and you'll be able to read all of that, along with a bunch of other SFU publications, like the SFU Student Journal of Criminology, the Liar Magazine, which is a literary journal, the Undergraduate Journal of Society and Culture, the Educational Review, all sorts of stuff on there. And yeah, so check that out. Coming up next, oh, I guess I should let you know, you heard a big hit, 1.5 billion views on YouTube for that track, No Lie, by Sean Paul featuring Dua Lipa. That was Senna's pick. And then you heard my pick for the first piece of Christmas / holiday music that I have played this year, 2025. That was Superpowered Palestinian Baby by The Plodes from their EP, That's a Reindeer, Stupid, A Plodes Christmas. They are from Victoria. Super cool. The bassist, Jackson, is also in the band King Bob, who I've played a lot here over the last year. Up next, we are going to hear a interview recorded by up-and-coming superstar volunteer, Public Affairs Department volunteer Florentina. This is her interview with Aman Chandi from Movement YVR.
Hello, everybody. My name is Florentina. I will be your interviewer today. And today we are talking to Aman Chandi, one of the employees working for Movement YVR. Aman, do you want to maybe introduce yourself a little bit?
Thank you, Florentina. Hi, my name is Aman Chandi. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the Director of Programs and Fundraising at Movement, Metro Vancouver Transit Riders. We're a nonprofit fighting for better transit in our region. We exist to elevate the voices of 1 million transit riders in Metro Vancouver and advocate for more reliable and accessible transit for everyone.
Okay, yeah. And Movement, I mean, it's been a while. It's been running for a while now. Do you mind talking a little bit more about like previous projects that you guys had?
Sure. Yeah. Movement has been around for 2 years now, but we seriously started mobilizing the community like a year ago, earlier this year. Initially, it was just our executive director, Dennis Agar. He was working for free for a year, and then, you know, we raised enough funds to hire staff. So now there are four of us working full time at Movement. And yeah, within just this short year, we have achieved a lot. We have done small scale campaigns across Burnaby, Surrey, and Vancouver. maybe I can walk you through some of our campaigns. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, like, absolutely. That'd be amazing.
Hold up. I created like this really good, I'm working on our 2-year report right now, like what we've done. So I have it all here organized. So yeah, we, our 2024, the biggest thing that we did then was the Vancouver Bus Lane Motion. So we mobilized hundreds of volunteers along with Vision Zero Vancouver, and worked with Vancouver City Council members to support a motion that accelerates and expands the city's effort to build bus lanes. And that passed. And right now the city is delivering those promises. So the Kingsway bus priority measures are in taking place. There are also bus lanes being added in Marple. But usually, you know, even though the city has committed to it, there's often backlash, especially from business association, business improvement, improvement associations. So what we do is we exist to kind of like, well, for this campaign, what we're doing is like we want to ensure that the city is delivering on what their promises are, and the results are not being diluted by the concerns of like a few. So, you know, like moving on street parking is a big point of contention between BIAs and us. Business groups, like, they overestimate how important that on-street parking is. And for them, they feel that their customers are only coming by car. But what we're trying to show them is that transit also brings a lot of people into the neighborhood and into their businesses. So that's sort of our, like, current challenge right now, and the bulk of our work. We also advocated for the BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, in Burnaby Heights. And again, the tension there is always the sort of like the Burnaby Heights merchant, again, like don't want to give up parking, and they viewed this BRT as being not a good solution for their for that neighborhood. But for us, you know, backed by data and what we hear from transit rider, that is a very important investment. So we are just like bringing those voices of transit riders and elevating them so they don't get lost. And again, like the results, the solutions don't get diluted by the voices of a few. We also have been advocating for a low-income fare pass. And this was a campaign that we launched earlier this year in the summer. Many major cities like Calgary, Toronto, Quebec City, Halifax, and Winnipeg, they have a low-income pass. And we don't have that right now. So that's something that we're advocating for. We also supported Build a SkyTrain to UBC. And this was a campaign that was mainly led by the student group there. So we've just been supporting them in that. We've done a lot of work in Surrey. We've been working with the city of Surrey, especially to support their Surrey Transit Vision, which is a long-term vision of how transit is going to be built and prioritized in the region. So we've been providing our insight and our expertise on that. And yeah, our focus is mainly Surrey right now, and areas that have been underfunded and underinvested in, especially with transit. So yeah, we have a lot of small campaigns in that area. We also hosted Go By Transit Week, which is part of an international effort for Week Without Driving, where we celebrate people who ride transit and encourage civic leaders to try riding transit with us. Mm-hmm. So that was our first time doing it in October, and it was a huge success. Some of the elected officials that we took transit with, it was their first time riding the bus.
Okay.
So yeah, you know, it was really good because these are the people that are making decisions about our transit system. So it was important to, you know, for them to see like this bus is crowded, this bus gets stuck here. So for them to experience that firsthand was really important for us to showcase. Yeah, and this summer we've been really busy. We hired 9 Canada Summer Job students, and yeah, we had a lot of exposure at different events, and they helped us with social media and other things. And I also want to highlight that our biggest campaign and our biggest mobilizing effort till date has been Save the Bus campaign, which was earlier this spring, like this past this. Earlier this year, like there was this fiscal cliff that was going to threaten a bus service in Metro Vancouver. And they were talking about eliminating buses, like cutting buses by 50%, which would have been devastating for our region. Like, we don't have enough buses, bus service at
really,
the moment.
Yeah.
And would have been just terrible. So yeah, we mobilized transit riders around that. And that was our first time kind of doing doing an event and a campaign at that scale. So yeah, we got them to write letters to their MLAs and mayors. We canvassed at different bus stops. We put up posters. We also hosted a rally at Metrotown. And the result was we saved the bus, we prevented the cuts, and we also achieved a 5% increase in bus service. So yeah, we've been really busy. There's a lot happening. We are a small but mighty group of transit riders and transit advocates. So yeah, there's always something happening at Movement. It's never a dull day. And I can't believe like we achieved all this within a year. Like it feels like we've been, if this year feels like 4 years in one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that's, we're having fun along the way. So mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Yeah. And, you know, I, as a transit rider too, I really do appreciate the work that you do. I remembered, I don't think I've even transferred to SFU quite just yet at the time, mm-hmm. but I heard about like the plans to cut buses.
Save
and like everybody I knew was like panicking because they didn't have any other form of transportation.
Yeah.
Yeah, to like get on campus, to get to work even.
And that's part of like the main part of our work is actually making sure that the transit riders are informed about what's happening, like the policy and issues that are going to impact them. So yeah, that's important that you were hearing about it before you heard about who we are, like that was on your radar.
I actually, about that though, how do you guys like reach out to transit riders? Because I'd imagine it's kind of a bit difficult because people riding transit don't often really think about the fact that they need to like keep up with Translink news or anything like that.
Yeah. We have a different channels to reach different transit riders, like depends on like if they're online, like what their preferences are. So we have all the social medias, like we're everywhere online. We have a Discord community where we mobilize volunteers. So those are the people that have been connected with movements from day one. And that community is also growing, but that's more of a community to talk about, like different mobilizing efforts and also for us to mobilize volunteers there. We also have, do a lot of booting at different community events. So that's where we see transit riders directly. Mm-hmm. And we also just like for our different campaigns, we canvass at like bus stops. So we meet the transit riders where they are waiting for the bus. And, you know, that's the best way for us to engage with the transit riders is being there, waiting for the bus together, taking the bus and just kind of chatting about like what could be better. But yeah, we're always thinking about ways of how we can improve our outreach. And we've been testing a lot of different things. And we have really good folks on our team. Nav Sharma, he supports our social media. And yeah, he has the know-how of like, you know, what messaging works. And for us, it's also really important to keep our messaging accessible. I'm a trained planner and Dennis Agar, the executive, he's also a trained planner. So oftentimes, like when we think about these things, we get lost in our like plannery jargon. So it's very important for us to like pull back and be like, okay, you know, for transit advocacy, we want to make sure that, you know, like you understand what this is. And so we try to keep our messaging to the point, very direct and very like action oriented. So yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question.
Are there like currently any difficulty with reaching out to them though? With your current methods or?
I think we have been successful. Like we have also like a robust newsletter too. Like
that's true.
Around 88,000 folks signed up for our newsletter. So folks are really engaged with our work. Like, we were looking at our open rate for our newsletter, and it's pretty good. Like, I worked at SFE before, and compared to those numbers, like, people are really connected and interested in our work. So that really shows. We also translate our materials.
Ooh, okay.
Different languages as well. So that's also very important, like, for Save the Bus. Like, all our materials were translated, like, into, like, 10 different languages, like, main languages that are spoken in Metro Vancouver. So, you know, again, that access piece is really important, important to us. But the challenge is just around, yeah, like, I think folks are busy, like, especially trans. There's a lot for out there that people care about. And, you know, I think it's just keeping it relevant. Keeping our messaging relevant and clear. That's just what we the lessons that we're learning, and we're continue to, like, develop our messaging based around those principles of, like, clarity and just yeah.
Your latest event was the one held, I want to say, like, now 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. TransLink's Next Top Funding Model. Love the name, by the way. But yeah, I guess my question is, what kind of what motivated you to have this event, to hold this event?
Yeah, so this event grew from our biggest campaign, the Save the Bus campaign. Mm. Yeah, like I mentioned, there's a huge budget problem, and there's a risk of cutting buses in half, which could have caused, like, traffic jams and leaving many people in Metro Vancouver without transit. So we mobilized around that, and there was a 5% increase in service. The bus was saved, but this solution is only temporary and will only last till 2027. And we knew that after that, like, we need to find a long-term reliable way to pay for transit in our region. And politicians often avoid raising taxes because it's risky for them, even though many people we have seen across different provinces and countries support better transit, even if it means paying a bit more. So we knew that we needed to step in as a transit riders advocacy group to help make it easier for politicians to act on, like, finding, like, sustainable solutions for funding transit in our region. So yeah, we hosted this event. We wanted to make it really fun, hence the name, like, America's Next Top Model, Transit's Next Top Funding Model. And yeah, we just wanted to host an event where different ideas for funding transit are shared and are judged to see which ones the public supports or at least doesn't strongly oppose. And then our aim is to give that information to our elected leaders so they can confidently make fair decisions to keep improving transit and avoid serious service cuts and other traffic problems in our region. So that was sort of the thing. It's just a continuation of the Save the Bus campaign, and for us to be more proactive about, yeah, thinking that, you know, in 2027, we don't want to be in the same situation again where we have to, like, you know, again, face the 50% you know, cut to our bus service. That's just not acceptable for us.
Yeah, but it's interesting you mentioned, like, other, I guess, other areas, other cities have kind of increased their taxes to help fund their their public transit. And that's kind of the BC, or I guess the Vancouver's government is kind of against that. But if I'm remembering correctly, most of the representations did kind of, like, go back to taxes anyway. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think even the winner was the sales tax, but maybe you could also tell our listeners as well a few of the other presentations I might have also missed too.
Yeah. So we had a lot of interest from different folks, and we received an overwhelming, amount of pitches for the competitions section. And yeah, it was really hard to choose which ones we were going to have for the presentations at the event. So we had elimination of the homeowner grant and the ICBC rebate. We had sharing property transfer tax revenue. We had the land value tax, land value capture, employer transit pass program. We had per kilometer charge. So sales tax was the judge's choice, and vehicle levy was the people's choice. And I can kind of go into like what the sales tax and the vehicle
Yeah,
levy,
absolutely.
if
That'd be
that's okay.
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, so the sales tax team, they suggested raising the provincial sales tax by 0.5% to 1% only in Metro Vancouver to pay for transit improvements. So PST already doesn't apply to many essentials, but it does apply more to things people buy for fun or luxury, like yachts, vapes, and hotels. So that way the tax collects money from visitors and people buying luxury goods, not just everyday items. So right now BC also has the lowest sales tax in Canada. So increasing it by 0.5% or 1% would only bring BC's rate up to the average level, similar to Ontario's. So this makes the tax hike fair and balanced, sharing the cost for better transit without putting too much burden on regular folks in Metro Vancouver. So that was the one that judges picked. And our judges were also not the way that we selected our judges that was that we don't want them to be, people that are like experts in like transit funding and in this space. We wanted to get folks from different industry to represent, like the diversity of our community. So we had restaurateurs, we had people in banking. So yeah, like d people from different areas, not just like transit and policy. So they picked this one. And then the audience choice. So we had a component in the competition where we facilitated a dialogue with the audience for them to also pick a funding tool that they prefer. So they prefer the vehicle levy, which is a small fee added to your yearly car insurance bill. So it's an easy way to collect money because it doesn't need extra work to manage. Other places like Montreal already do this. So it's very, very feasible. And a flat fee can be tough for people with less money. So there's another way to charge based on the car's value. So, for example, in Washington State, someone with an older, cheaper car pays less, while owners of expensive cars pay much more. So, to make it fair, people with low income could get discounts or pay nothing for the that's what the vehicle levy is. But there's a lot more detail and a lot more nuance to these funding tools. And we can find more information on our website as well. Like we have the results of the competition and also like our plans for next steps. You can find more there at movementbyvr.ca.
Is there a proposal you were personally rooting for or you found most interesting out of the one submitted?
Yeah, I think we actually liked all of the proposals that were there. But yeah, I think I really personally like the vehicle levy. For me, it seems the most equitable way to pay for transit. Like there's successes that I've seen around this model as well. So that one was pretty exciting to see get the people's choice. And also the elimination of the homeowner grant and ICBC rebate was an interesting pitch as well. Like car owners, they get like a $110 check from ICBC. Like that could be something that could be directed to funding, something more of a public good like transit. So that was an interesting proposal as well. Yeah.
I guess before we close out for the day, in that case, do you maybe want to talk about any future plans movement has?
The future plan is to take the results of this competition and take it to our elected officials and tell them that, this is something that, 300 people that attended that event, these are the two things that emerged, the two type of taxes, two type of funding models that they could consider, to avoid another fiscal cliff in 2027. And yeah, what we want to do is we want to TransLink has their Access for Everyone plan, but that plan is not funded. So it's not deliverable. Like they're not able to deliver because there's no funding associated with it. So, we want them to be able to like action the things that they have said in that plan as well. So we're going to be mobilizing around that as well. Like we want to tackle overcrowding in our region and pass ups. We want more corridors to have 24-hour bus service. We want to add transit in neighborhoods that don't currently have transit or that are like underserved by transit. We want increased frequency to reduce wait times. We also want to fund like 9 new BRT bus rapid transit lines. We want to boost Handy Dart service and also build the SkyTrain to UBC and the gondola to SFU. So there's a lot to do. And there's a definite role for transit riders to be part of these discussions. And that's what we are trying to do at Movement. We want to, for transit riders to feel like, you know, they can go to their counselor, that they have enough information and just like encouragement to go to their mayor, their MLA, and tell them that, no, like, I support you funding transit, like improve transits, because they often don't hear from transit riders.
Yeah,
and you can stay in touch with everything that we're doing. Like, we're very active on our social medias, so we're everywhere at Movement by VR. Yeah. And you can also read more about us on our website at movementbyvr.ca.
Perfect. Thank you
so much for this. Yeah. No, thank you so much for giving us the space and this platform to talk to your listeners. And I hope that they engage with us. There's, again, like I mentioned, there's ways that you can get connected to our work. You can volunteer. There's a lot to do.
Yeah. And good luck for your future endeavors, too.
And thank you so much, Florentina.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thanks to Florentina and Aman for that conversation. You can find out more about Movement at movementyvr.ca or at movementyvr on all the platforms. I will be back in the new year. You'll hear some repeats over the next couple of weeks over the holiday season, some special stuff. And I'll leave you with a great local rendition of a great Christmas song. See you later. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. See you next time.